From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, June 4th, 2026. The Maine race for governor will be a three-way contest now that an independent candidate has qualified for the November ballot. Steve Missler has more.
State Senator Rick Bennett, the former chairman of the Maine Republican Party, is the only independent who'd submitted enough signatures this week to make the November ballot. He'll take on the Republican and Democratic winners of next Tuesday's primary election, setting up a three-way race that will not be decided by ranked choice voting. There are also 28 independent candidates running for the state legislature, 7 in the Senate and 21 in the House. 3 of the independents running for the Senate switched their party affiliation from Republican to independent before gathering ballot qualifying signatures earlier this year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
A South Portland man is suing Immigration and Customs Enforcement for allegedly violating his constitutional rights during the January surge. Robert Peck, a U.S. citizen, was observing ICE activity in Scarborough when two agents stopped him and threatened to arrest him for following them, according to court records. Peck's lawyer, David Webert, says it's part of a pattern of threats against lawful observers across the country.
They were using it to intimidate and criminalize protected First Amendment activity, and that is a hallmark of an authoritarian police state.
Webert says his client is seeking monetary damages under the Maine Civil Rights Act. The Department of Homeland Security did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Nirav Shah is facing renewed criticism over his handling of a deadly Legionnaires' disease outbreak in Illinois more than a decade ago. Shah was Illinois' public health director at the time of the 2015 outbreak, which claimed the lives of 14 residents at the state-run Veterans Home. He was criticized in a subsequent state auditor's report for waiting to seek help from the U.S. CDC to manage the outbreak. On Thursday, Illinois State Senator Christina Castro joined a press call organized by a Maine statehouse lobbyist to assert that Shah prioritized optics over effectively managing the crisis.
This was really a deadly scandal in Illinois, and Maine voters deserve to know about it. Nirav Shah focused, like I said, on his public image first before those that died.
Organizers of the press call would not say if the event was organized by or affiliated with a rival gubernatorial candidate. Shah has faced criticism of the outbreak before during his confirmation to become Maine's CDC director and later by Republicans upset at his handling of Maine's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking at his campaign headquarters in Freeport this afternoon, Shah stood by what he called his scientific response to the Legionnaires outbreak. He says he and his team consulted with U.S. CDC experts multiple times a day during the outbreak. He acknowledged that he could have communicated more and sooner and says he brought that lesson to his response to the COVID pandemic when he held daily briefings.
I have been tested, and as a result of having been tested, I am a better leader for it.
Shah denounced the attacks and says he's trying to move politics toward problem solving, not partisanship. Also in the gubernatorial race, Democrat Troy Jackson is defending his voting record on reproductive health issues today in the wake of attack ads he says were funded by a PAC that supports his rival, Nirav Shah. The ad, funded by 314 Action Fund, claims Jackson believes abortions should be illegal and voted for legislation to ban them, but Jackson pointed to multiple bills he co-sponsored during his time as Senate president that expanded access to contraceptives and abortion care.
My record's been sterling over the last 10 years. In fact, I've been the person that's been fighting the hardest on these issues while, he wasn't even in the state of Maine.
Attack ads have ramped up over the last week before the June 9th primary elections. Shah and Jackson are considered frontrunners for the Democratic nomination, according to some recent polls. The New England Aquarium is opposing efforts by the National Marine Fisheries Service to deregulate vessel speed limits designed to protect the endangered North Atlantic right whale. Michael Livingston reports.
In a letter sent to the Assistant Administrator for NOAA Fisheries, the aquarium cited studies that say vessel strikes remain a threat to the small population of right whales left on the East Coast. The speed limits were established in 2008 in management areas where right whales were observed during their migration, but NOAA says it wants to reduce what it calls unnecessary regulatory and economic burdens on mariners. New England Aquarium scientist Jessica Redfern says that while radar technology has improved for vessels to detect whales, the speed limits are still necessary.
Technology development and the vessel speed rule are not mutually exclusive. With less than 390 North Atlantic right whales remaining, they are one of our most endangered marine mammal species in United States water.
The public comment period for the proposed rule change closed earlier this week. Now NOAA Fisheries will review the input before making a decision. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
The Portland Hearts of Pine announced today that the club has officially secured rights to a Women's United League soccer team. The new team will debut next May and expects to play 6 home matches at Fitzpatrick Stadium. Hannah Searway, Vice President of Fan Experience for the club, says the season will run May to July.
It is a little bit shorter, so we just need to make sure that people understand when they're supporting the team, they're not necessarily going to always be in market and have a full year of home games.
Searway says the team name will be announced in the next few months. Every year, more than 7,000 women are released from Maine prisons and jails. Having a criminal record can make it more challenging to find a job and stable housing. Some women struggle to regain custody of their children. Others lack emotional support as they confront feelings of inadequacy and isolation. But as Susan Sharon reports, a Maine-based nonprofit called Reentry Sisters is trying to change that by building a community of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women, one sister at a time.
3 days before Jessica Sinclair's release from prison, a flood severely damaged the employee housing that she'd secured. Without that place to stay, she says her new job was gone because she didn't have a driver's license or a way to get to work. From there, she says things quickly went downhill.
The person that picked me up from prison was my mother. She literally had drugs in the car, and somebody was doing drugs like right behind my head. So within an hour and a half, I'm using meth. Within 3 hours, I was smoking heroin. And then within 3.5 hours, I had to use the Narcan that the prison gave me when I was released to save somebody's life at the house I bought heroin from.
For about 8 months, Sinclair says she tried to fool her probation officer into thinking that she was compliant and had her life on track. But eventually, she couldn't do it anymore and was sent back to the Maine Correctional Center for 2.5 more years.
I just did not have the support. I did not have the financial support. I had no stability. And like, if you hang out with people you used to use drugs with, you're probably going to use drugs with those people, and so on.
According to the Maine Department of Corrections, about half of the women in prison are serving time for drug convictions. Some grew up in families with mental illness and substance use disorder. And according to the Prison Policy Initiative, 90% of incarcerated women are survivors of trauma, including physical and sexual abuse. Like Sinclair, many are also mothers. They deal with complicated feelings of abandonment and loss in prison and stigma after they get out.
My name is Linda Small. I'm formerly incarcerated. And that's what led me to begin Reentry Sisters, was the absolute lack of services anywhere along the carceral system that really focused on the needs of women and girls.
Small, who is the founder and the executive director of Reentry Sisters, says she watched women repeatedly cycle through the prison's revolving door. She'd become an advocate on the inside and realized she'd have to continue once she got out. So she and a friend started a Facebook page for women who've interacted with the justice system.
Next thing I know, there were 60 women on there, just word of mouth, and now there's well over 220 some odd women statewide, which showed me that there was a need and a desire to maintain connections.
At first, Small says it was a place to post job and educational opportunities and a way for women to help each other without being judged. But in 2023, Reentry Sisters emerged as a nonprofit that focuses on policy and legislation and direct services for women in prison, where they hold in-person meetings every month.
So we're getting to know these women and know what their concerns are and bridge those gaps before they're actually leaving.
Reentry Sisters also emphasizes higher education.
I will say that I have gotten the grades back on 2 of my classes, and I got an A in each one. I'm just waiting to hear back on my communications class.
Yeah. Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's Sinclair speaking on Zoom at a weekly check-in of Reentry Sisters. Sinclair is now a second-year student at the University of Maine, Augusta. And for the past year, she and 9 others have also been taking classes at Colby College, getting trauma therapy and lessons in money management, as part of a special education initiative. Cohort member Victoria Scott started taking classes while serving 8 years in prison. She graduated from UMA last year and now works part-time for the Educational Institute at MIT.
I was a poor kid from the sticks in Maine. Like, I don't have pathways to opportunity like this. And that's something that Reentry Sisters really shines at, is creating relationships for people post-incarceration.
Scott says these pathways and relationships help build resilience. Not everyone leaving prison can withstand the pressure. Over a 10-year period from 2013 to 2023, the Maine DOC found that 700 people died while serving probation in Maine. Scott herself says she lost 3 good women friends she met in prison.
It really hurts when you lose people to addiction or to other struggles because they didn't have the support, they didn't have the opportunity, they didn't have the motivation, or they just couldn't find something in themselves to overcome that.
Jessica Sinclair says Reentry Sisters has helped her find like-minded, sober friends who lift each other up and hold each other accountable, something that was missing from her life the first time she left prison. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, Summer Reads. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.